Welcome to the jungle of Silicon Valley, where idealism goes to die and ambition transforms into something unrecognizable. Chaos Monkeys isn't just another tech memoir, it's a front row seat to the gladiatorial combat that defines startup culture. What makes this tale so compelling isn't just the insider gossip, though there's plenty, but how it reveals the machinery behind the digital interfaces we interact with daily. Imagine working at a company where your personal data is dissected like a lab specimen, where algorithms track your every click, and where your attention is the product being sold. This isn't dystopian fiction. It's the reality Antonio Garcia Martinez exposes with surgical precision. The book caused such upheaval that Facebook tried blocking its publication, and years later, Apple employees protested when Martinez was hired. Why such strong reactions? Because he pulls back the curtain on Silicon Valley's most cherished myths. The tech world doesn't just create product, it creates narratives about changing the world while often engaging in behavior that would make Wall Street blush. What starts as making the world more connected evolves into how can we monetize every human interaction? It's this transformation from idealism to cynical pragmatism that forms the book's philosophical backbone. Have you ever felt trapped in a well-paying job that slowly drained your soul? That was my reality at AdChemy, a well-funded company without a viable product. Leaving felt like a prison break, complete with threats and last-minute equity bribes. This experience resonates widely. That moment when you realize an environment has become toxic and the gap between public claims and private reality becomes unbearable. Taking the leap into entrepreneurship captures that terrifying yet exhilarating choice of potential over security. Y Combinator, Silicon Valley's premier startup accelerator, becomes the next stage. Here, startups compete for attention like performers in a high-stakes show. Weekly dinners serve as both pitching grounds to tech luminaries and bonding sessions with fellow entrepreneurs, transforming programmers into members of a techno elite. The co-founder relationship forged in this pressure cooker becomes more intimate than most marriages. You learn each other's habits, triggers, and develop your own communication shorthand. Like any intense relationship, these bonds either strengthen under pressure or spectacularly implode. Our prototype day presentation was a humbling disaster. Frozen screens, failed demos, and improvised pitching, while competitors like Rapative showcased remarkably polished products. This stark contrast revealed a fundamental truth about startups. Today's success story can become tomorrow's cautionary tale, while an overlooked company suddenly captures the Valley's attention. Demo Day epitomizes Silicon Valley theater. Founders get just 2.5 minutes to pitch for millions. The preparation is intense. YC partners correct body language, alumni share tactical advice, and peers scrutinize every presentation detail. When the moment arrives, investors flood in with checkbooks ready, creating a FOMO-driven atmosphere that feels less like a business presentation and more like running with bulls. Thrilling, risky, and potentially life-changing if navigated successfully. Negotiating with angel investor Russell Siegelman felt like a delicate courtship ritual. Unlike VCs managing others' money, angels invest personal funds, creating unique dynamics. In Silicon Valley's peculiar ecosystem, young founders with just prototypes and ambition regularly face millionaires to discuss valuations, a dance requiring confident poise while concealing desperation. Our initial funding success was interrupted when Acme filed a lawsuit alleging trade secret theft and contract breaches. This wasn't just a legal challenge, but an existential threat that could deter investors and drain our resources. Fighting this corporate Goliath required asymmetric warfare. We leveraged our speed and agility, exploiting pressure points through relationships with influential VCs and potential partners like Microsoft. This created multi-directional pressure on our larger adversary. By February 2011, Acme offered settlement. we closed with a final technical flourish, providing them an encrypted, legally compliant, but practically useless code base. This experience taught us an unspoken truth about entrepreneurship. Sometimes success isn't about building something amazing, but simply outlasting those trying to destroy you. A startup launch is more performance art than technical milestone, designed to create momentum. Our March 2011 public debut was primarily a PR exercise, leveraging tech media's appetite for novelty to gain strategic visibility. This theatrical approach extended to acquisition talks. Twitter's Jessica Verilli's outreach post-launch was the result of careful signaling. Preparation involved not just knowing our metrics, but studying her background and Twitter's strategic position. As discussions with Twitter and Facebook progressed, they resembled diplomatic negotiations. Each interaction required strategic information sharing and leverage positioning to create competitive tension between potential acquirers. The process revealed a painful truth when personal ambition conflicted with team loyalty. The choice to pursue Facebook opportunities while directing the company toward Twitter exposed Silicon Valley's reality. Beneath team solidarity lies individual calculation. The emotional burden of managing these deceptions highlighted the personal cost of entrepreneurial ambition. Facebook's campus embodies a unique reality where traditional business norms yield to an almost religious dedication to connection. The orientation process feels more like indoctrination, with leaders like Chris Cox evangelizing Facebook's role as humanity's digital nervous system. The PM role quickly proves less glamorous than advertised. Rather than being product CEOs, PMs serve as shit umbrellas, shielding engineers from chaos while juggling technical expertise, business sense, and political acumen to succeed. Mark Zuckerberg's true genius lies not in coding prowess, but in maintaining a vision so compelling that thousands of brilliant engineers devote themselves to his cause. This creates a culture where employees see themselves as digital revolutionaries rather than mere workers. This devotion became evident during Facebook's response to Google Plus in 2011. Under the battle cry, Carthago Delenda Est, Zuckerberg transformed product development into warfare, declaring a company-wide emergency that demonstrated how fiercely Facebook guards its social media dominance. Despite Facebook's vast access to personal data, monetizing social information proves surprisingly difficult. Like parsing conversations in a crowded bar, most user interactions lack commercial intent. Even when products are discussed, context, sarcasm, and cultural nuances confound algorithms. Facebook's scale presents another challenge. Only major breakthroughs significantly impact revenue. The startup world operates amorally, where survival justifies most tactics. Tech giants' origin stories often reveal questionable behavior. Facebook hacked Harvard systems, Apple's founder sold illegal phone-phreaking devices, and Microsoft faced antitrust investigations. Yet success ultimately validates these methods in the public eye. Facebook's 2012 IPO marked its evolution from startup to public company, bringing the scrutiny and criticism Mark predicted. The company later launched initiatives like Internet.org to expand into developing markets. While framed as humanitarian efforts, these projects primarily served to grow Facebook's advertising reach, highlighting the tension between Silicon Valley's stated ideals and business imperatives.